Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
In the debate with his opening remarks, Mr. Poelinghuis.
Thank you, Mr. Lena, and it is good to be back here on the debate stage at St. Joe's. This is my third time on the debate stage, as was noted. I was here for the county executive race in 2011 against Chris Collins, as well as in 2015 in the county executive race against Ray Walter. And I do look forward to this debate. I know from my previous experience on the stage that the questions that these young gentlemen are going to ask are going to be very difficult, and that's good, and it shows the incredible atmosphere and leadership that you have here at St. Joe's from the teachers as well as the students who take this very seriously. As you heard, I graduated from Lackawanna High School, a graduate of Lackawanna in 1985. My father was a steel worker. My mother was a nurse at Mercy Hospital. And during the period that I was graduating and going to Lackawanna High School, the steel mill in Bethlehem Steel was closing. None of you know what it was like. None of you know what it was like as a student. There were over 20,000 individuals that were at one time employed there, and it basically was reduced to zero. It destroyed our community. It destroyed the city of Lackawanna and had a tremendous impact on our greater community in the Buffalo region. And that was some of the things that set in course my goals to try to help and give back to others as I watched what happened during that period. Now, when I was growing up, I was just like a lot of you. I played hockey. If you go back and find old pictures of me from the 70s and 80s, you'll find a good old hockey mullet on me in a few of those years. I still play hockey. I've coached hockey in the past. I had to give it up because it was a little too much of time constraint. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with the young of our community and trying to give back through leadership and mentoring as a hockey coach. And I'm running for county executive again because I believe we've accomplished a tremendous amount in these last few years, but we are not done yet. Give you an example. When I ran for county executive, the unemployment rate in Erie County was approximately 9%. We've been able to drop that unemployment rate to approximately 4%, but that means that there's at least 4% of the population that still is looking for a job. I ask for your support going forward so that we as a community can continue moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Poelinghuis. Ms. Dixon, your opening remarks.
Well, thank you very much. And first and foremost, I want to thank St. Joe's for hosting this. I've never done this before, but I was very excited to do it. You've had such a rich tradition and history since 1861. I'm even wearing the colors as best I could come up with in my closet this morning. And you know, you have so much to be proud of. And I really want to thank the students, the staff, the alumni, the distinguished guests of public service who I enjoy serving with. Thank you to you as well for being here today. I grew up in Amherst, but I have lived in Hamburg for the last 21 years, and that's where I am raising my four kids. I have one at Michigan State, one at UB, one in high school, and an eighth grader at Hamburg Middle, who is also shadowing today. I see that you have a shadow day. This community has been so good to me, and I truly love Buffalo and Western New York, but I feel as though we can do better. You know, as a journalist for several years and covering stories and sitting in your living rooms and on your front doorsteps and talking to you about the issues, and when you would call the news when you had a question or a concern or you weren't getting the answers that you were looking for, I enjoyed being that person that helped fight for you to help get the answers. And a lot of what I saw in government was, I found it too political, and that's one of the reasons why I decided to run for office, because I viewed when you seek answers as a reporter, you try to get answers for the person. It doesn't matter what their political stripes are. So I did run for office. I quit a career to run for office. I was successful and have represented Hamburg, Lackawanna, and a portion of South Buffalo for the last 8 years in the county legislature. I represented a more rural area when we were still a body of 15 for 2 years. It has been a great joy of mine and a great privilege and a great honor. And I think going forward, I look forward to working with this community to continue to move this
county
forward.
Thank you, Ms. Dixon. Thank you very much. We decided to begin the debate with a moderator question, And we want to show a commercial that each of you have run a number of times. The commercials were fact-checked by Channel 2. We did not fact-check the fact-checkers. So we're not saying that these are accurate, but we wanted to give each candidate an opportunity to respond to a commercial that's been airing. Initially, both campaigns started out with very soft commercials, not hard-hitting. In the last few weeks, it has taken a right turn. So we want to show you, first of all, we're going to ask each of you to comment on your own commercial. Mm-hmm. We'll begin with Ms. Dixon, and if we could run the commercial, please.
Here our truth test comes in, separating fact from fiction. And as is almost always the case in a race like this, neither Mark Poloncarz nor Lynn Dixon is being fully honest in these commercials. Each campaign seems to have a major theme. For Dixon, it's about portraying Poloncarz as a big spender who has raised your taxes.
Everyone knows our taxes are too high, except Mark Poloncarz. Property taxes skyrocketed under his watch, increasing by more than 24%.
That's not the full story. Here's what you should know about Erie County property taxes. The total amount of money brought in has gone up about 24% since 2013, averaging 4% more in tax revenue each year. But the Poloncarz team points out the tax rate has gone down from $5.03 per $1,000 of assessed value when he took office to $4.84 this year and a proposed $4.72 next year. So if the rate went down, how did the tax levy go up? Well, in some cases, property values went up. Poloncarz's campaign manager said, quote, assessment growth is a sign that there is growth in a community. We have more business and more homes on the tax roll.
Thank you. So each candidate will have a minute and a half to respond. There will be no rebuttal. The gist of the fact check is that the property tax rate increased by 24%, but the tax rate, according to the fact checker, actually went down. The tax levy went up, as Mr. Poloncarz said, because we have more homes and businesses that are being assessed, and property values have also gone up in the city. Ms. Dixon, your response.
Sure. So when it comes to paying your tax bill went up. You can go to erie.gov and go to Real Property and type in your address, and it will show you. Taxes have gone up. Mark Poloncarz's property taxes have gone up. Mine have gone up. The tax rate, yes, went down, but the tax levy, which is what determines your bill, which is what you pay, that went up. And that has gone up 24% since Mark Poloncarz took office. In his proposed budget for this year, it will go up another 5% if it is passed as is. So your taxes will go up another 5% if the budget passes as is. So yes, the tax rate went down, but what you pay in property taxes, that went up.
Thank you. Our next commercial is being aired by Mr. Poloncarz. If you'd run the commercial, please.
Now to the main attack on Dixon.
As a county legislator, Lynn Dixon voted with Chris Collins more than 600 times.
Once again, not the full story. Disgraced former Congressman Chris Collins was county executive from 2008 through 2011. Dixon joined the legislature in 2010. In the 2 years they served together, yes, she voted to approve more than 600 of Collins' executive items. But the vast majority of those were unanimous votes on often uncontroversial issues. And here's some context. Dixon's campaign shared data with Two on Your Side showing Democratic legislator Maria White, who is now Poloncarz's deputy county executive, also voted with Collins a lot, 94% of the time. And one of the attacks is especially problematic.
A vote slashing daycare funding.
That's false. There was no county legislature vote to slash daycare funding. Collins administratively changed the eligibility rules. The legislature had no say. Dixon did vote against a resolution that criticized Collins for the move, but she voted for a different resolution that said the Erie County legislature was opposed to the curtailing of the child care subsidy.
So, Mr. Poloncarz, according to the commercial, Ms. Dixon voted with a former congressman 600 times, but most of the votes, according to the fact checker, were unanimous. Maria White, who is now your deputy county executive, voted with Mr. Collins as well 94% of the time, And at the end of the commercial, it's noted that she slashed daycare funding, and the fact checker says this is false because Collins changed the eligibility rule. Would you please comment on your commercial?
Yes, Mr. Lina. My commercial in talking about the 600 votes with regards to my opponent is accurate. My opponent likes to bring out how she voted against Mr. Collins's budget, and she joined other legislators to pass budget amendments to his budget. Those budget amendments were actually vetoed by Mr. Collins. Now, any legislator who passed budget amendments would then vote to override those vetoes. Instead, my opponent, when push came to shove, actually voted to sustain the vetoes. So she voted to pass things to change the budget that Mr. Collins presented. And then when the final vote was done, when it really came push to shove to see what was going to be the important decision and what budget was going to pass, instead of voting for her own amendments as she previously did, she voted with Mr. Collins to sustain his vetoes. Just goes to show me that she was there supporting the Collins agenda. I think it's important that the public know that. And briefly, with regards to the taxes, as I have a little bit more time, the tax levy has gone up. But that's a good thing because that means we as a community pay less of a pie. I'll give you an example. When I came into office, the area where Harbor Center is, I don't know how many of you have gone down there, watch hockey, played it. It was a City of Buffalo parking lot. It was worth zero. There were no taxes that were generated on it. It's now worth $200 million. And a good example of another property is what's called 500 Seneca. It was worth $325,000. It's now worth $26 million, and we generate taxes off of that, and that's all part of the new levy.
Thank you very much. We'll now begin with questions from our student panel. The first direct question will go to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, on July 12th, you tweeted a warning to Buffalo citizens concerning possible raids being conducted by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. This tweet included the instructions for citizens about how to fight back against these raids, which were aimed at arresting and deporting undocumented immigrants living in Buffalo. However, only 2 days earlier, regarding a different matter, you released a statement that read in part that in a civilized democratic society, we do not get to selectively pick the laws that we want to enforce and ignore those we dislike. How do you reconcile that statement with the tweet?
Easily. The Constitution of the United States refers to persons. It does not talk about citizens. It talks about persons. If you look at the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, it also refers to persons with regards to freedom of speech, right against self-incrimination, right against unlawful search and seizure. Well, what we talked about in the tweet, what I tweeted about, was know your rights. You can fight back with your rights legally, because even an undocumented immigrant in this country has rights under the law. A lot of people don't understand that, but the Constitution of the United States does not just grant rights to citizens of the United States, it grants rights to people and persons. And if you leave here, go take a look at the Constitution and you will see that. Every individual in our country, regardless of who they are and their status in our country, has rights as guaranteed by our Constitution. And we have a right to uphold the Constitution. We don't always get to choose the laws that are enforced, but we do get to choose the way which we respond by the laws and rights that are granted through our laws and the Constitution of the United States. I've sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the State of New York, and the Charter of Erie County. I don't always like some of the laws that exist, but I do uphold them, and I will enforce the laws. And as an attorney, I want to ensure that everyone gets the rights that they deserve under the law.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Ms. Dixon?
Well, I found it to be incredibly irresponsible for an elected official to send out a tweet like that. And more importantly, you know, I think when you are Erie County Executive, it's a big job. And you have a lot of issues to address, and you're working with the public and the residents of Erie County. To spend all day on Twitter tweeting about issues and subjects that are national, international issues, and that are very divisive, and when you get very divisive in your tweets, you are the county executive for all of Erie County, not just those that align with you politically. And I think you have to step back and be the leader that people expect and not go on and spend your day tweeting about issues that are not pertinent to the Erie County
Thank
Executive.
You. Our next direct question to Ms. Dixon.
In 2019, the county spent $41.2 million on repair to roads and bridges. This is an increase from $38.6 million in 2018, which was an increase from $29.8 million in 2017. Mr. Poloncarz has stated that the county has reached its limit in construction due to the short length of the paving season, size of highway department staff, and number of private contractors. You have said that the county can and should expand its spending on county roads and bridges, and that you believe money can be used from the county's budget surplus, which currently stands at approximately $14 million. How much of that surplus do you believe the county should spend on its infrastructure?
Well, I will say this, that every year in the county legislature, we move to approve additional funds for roads and infrastructure. The county also borrows money to fix roads and infrastructure. Since 2012, we've borrowed $92 million. Since we still have $26 million of that sitting on the table that you're paying interest on. So that money is not going to work for you. And I believe, I speak with the contractors and they want the work. They're eager to do the work. And what we are seeing right now is there was a delay this year, but there was a scramble in September and October to quickly patch up some roads so that he could raise the road score. But it's done, and when I speak with the contractors, even the way the roads are being done, it changes the pitch of the road so that the water is going to settle in the middle of the road. And these roads that were patched up this year in a very quick way, they're going to have to be done again next year. So it's an incredible waste of taxpayer dollars with the way that we are doing the repair of our roads. And so that's been very troubling to me because we do have the money to invest in our roads and infrastructure, and money is left on the table each and every year.
Thank you, Mr. Poloncarz. Your rebuttal.
My administration has invested more on an annual basis than my two Republican predecessors. My administration, we've been averaging $58.4 million on roads in total when you include the operating and the capital budget. My predecessor was 54.8. That predecessor was 35 million. We just had a new rating, which actually was determined based on the roads earlier this year, not the roads as of the last month or so, which now puts us at the highest rated quality of roads for the county-owned roads since the former county executive, Dennis Gorski, in 1999. We are always working on roads. What did we do, or what I should say, what didn't we do the last 2 days? We couldn't go out there and pave roads. Why? Because it rained. And what happened last fall? It rained. What happened last spring? It rained. So you can't go out there and do roads when the weather's bad.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Ms. Dixon?
Under the Mark Poloncarz administration, we have had the lowest road scores in the past 20 years from that agency. As a matter of fact, when Mark Poloncarz ran in 2011 against Chris Collins, his whole campaign was about roads and infrastructure. And at that point, he called the roads dangerous. So the highest level, it's 0.05% from where Chris Collins' road work was rated. So if it was dangerous then, with a 0.05% increase, maybe it's a little less dangerous, but the fact remains, during his administration, the last 20 years, two of the lowest road scores have fallen during the Mark Poloncarz administration.
Just a very quick rebuttal. Mr. Lina would know because he was here in 2011. My campaign wasn't about roads. It was about cuts to libraries, cuts to healthcare clinics, cut to daycare funding. We talked about roads, but the vast majority of it was county government was going in the wrong direction.
Ms. Dixon, would you like to respond to those comments?
Mark Poloncarz posted a lot of videos with his phone showing roads, showing parks, showing bathrooms in terrible shape that were in the parks, showing roads in terrible shape. That was a big part of his campaign, and 8 years later, the bathrooms are still a mess in the parks, and the roads are still a mess.
Thank you. Our next direct question is to Ms. Dixon.
To Mr. Poloncarz, good morning.
Good
Both
morning.
You and Governor Cuomo supported the allotment of $750 million of taxpayer money towards the construction of Tesla's Buffalo solar panel plant, Solar City. In exchange, Tesla is expected to create 1,460 jobs for Buffalo workers by April 2020. However, the current job number stands at only 800 employees. So far, each job has cost New York taxpayers more than $900,000. Even if Gigafactory 2 reaches the target number, each job would have cost the taxpayers more than $500,000. Should governments be in the business of spending taxpayer money for the benefit of private sector employees for the mere possibility of future jobs?
Well, if I had my choice, we wouldn't spend a dollar. But the problem is we're competing with Texas, the Carolinas, Georgia, where they give out millions and millions of dollars as well. So if I had my choice, I would not want to see $1 go to the local business community. But we can't do that because we'd put ourselves behind the eight ball to everyone else, and we want to grow our community. There is not a single dollar associated with county government that went into the SolarCity/Tesla project. And we are all hopeful that it meets its goals. It has met its goals, as you note, of approximately 800 jobs as of today. One of the things that I implemented at the Erie County Industrial Development Agency, that's the economic arm of Erie County, is that if you get a tax break from the people of Erie County and you don't create the jobs that you say you're going to, we take that tax break back. Now, this was not a county project. But what the state does have is if they do not create those jobs as of April of next year, Tesla would have to pay a $41 million fine to New York State for not meeting its job goals. And I fully support that. Truthfully, with Elon Musk owning Tesla, I'd ask for as much money as we can get. Get $100 million from them. He keeps on talking about how much money he has. But they do have an obligation to create those jobs. If they don't, New York State should enforce the law and take $41 million back from Tesla. That's the contract that they entered into with New York, and I support that.
Ms. Dixon, your rebuttal. I think the questions got mixed up a little bit in terms of who was supposed to respond. So, Ms. Dixon, you have a minute and a half to respond.
Okay, thank you. And you guys are good with your questions and your research. So if Elon Musk has billions and he can't wait to spend it, then why is $750 million in public money going to a place that has not met its benchmark and not met its goals? The problem is, and that's why I asked for an audit, because I've been asking this question for a few years now, what exactly is going on at SolarCity? I do not see the transparency that I think is required and is necessary. And this is a huge public investment. You are right. It's costing almost $1 million a job right now, and we are not seeing the results of that. And it's interesting that Mark Poloncarz gets tough on these small business owners that in some case they own these businesses for generations. They're in a family for generations, right? And they maybe receive some incentive from the ECIDA. And now they've fallen on hard times. Maybe the economy's struggling or there's a death in the family. And so there's a few months where things get tough for them. And he wants to call them out publicly. But yet he doesn't want to call out Elon Musk or Governor Cuomo publicly for what is so far the failure at Tesla SolarCity. So, you know, I see the ECIDA is under his watch as being highly regulatory and not incentivizing enough. We need to do more. And you talk about competing with Texas and Georgia and all those states, yes, because they don't have nearly the regulations and tax struggles that we have here in New York State. How can you compete when you have that?
Thank you. This question will go to Ms. Dixon, okay. A direct question.
Signed into law this summer, the New York State's Driver's License Access and Privacy Act, or Green Light New York, restores a pre-9/11 right for all state citizens, regardless of immigration status, to obtain a driver's license. Ms. Dixon, will you announce your opposition to the bill early on in its life in the state legislature? Your opponent came out against the legislation only after it was already signed into law. However, Mr. Poloncarz has since said that if federal courts rule the law constitutional, it is the duty of state and county officials to enforce the law. Currently, Erie County is suing the state over the constitutionality of the law, and Republicans across the state are pushing for legislation to defend court clerks who refuse to issue a driver's license to undocumented immigrants. What is your position on such policies that would defend court clerks who refuse to issue a driver's license to undocumented immigrants?
Well, you know, I think it is very unfair to county clerks across New York State with a green light bill. Yes, I came out against it. When I took my 16-year-old son to get his permit a few months ago, and some of you might relate to this, that, you know, I had to provide my driver's license, I had to provide his passport, I had to provide a Social Security card, I had to fill out a bunch of paperwork to show that I was who I was and that Owen was who he is. You are now asking these civil service employees that don't have the training to understand what these documents are and if they're actually legal documents from the country that they're from. And you're asking them to try and determine whether or not it's a legal document, and then to allow them to get a driver's license. You know, we are a country of laws. And with this court case, you know, the big question is federal law versus state law. But you are asking civil service employees not trained in this to understand what these documents are. So I am in support, absolutely, of the court case. I believe that we will be victorious in that. But I think it goes to show you, too, when you pass bad laws, when you don't think things through from beginning to end and the repercussions.
Okay, Mr. Poloncar, your rebuttal.
When we look at the passage of the Green Light Bill, what we see is a law that I think has good intentions, but if you read the law, there's problems with it. And that's why we're in the situation that we are today, where there is a court case. There are, I think, approximately 13 states that actually allow for driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, including, I think, the closest one is Connecticut, which means there's probably someone who has a driver's license who's an undocumented immigrant driving on the roads in New York State. The problem is this needs to be resolved at the federal level. And that's exactly what, in some ways, the court case is determining. Does this meet federal standards? And what I've said and what was noted in the question is that if the law is determined to be constitutional, we have to uphold it. And I think that is what this democracy is built on. We cannot choose the laws to enforce when they're legal.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Poloncar.
The Diocese of Buffalo for decades covered up multiple allegations of child sexual abuse at the hands of its priests. According to the Buffalo News, more than 106 victims received part of a $17.5 million settlement with the diocese, and more than 165 victims have filed lawsuits against the diocese under the auspices of the new Child Victims Act. The Vatican itself has now initiated an investigation directing the Bishop of Brooklyn to make an apostolic visitation. Is it the role of state and local law enforcement to play a more proactive role in the future to safeguard against such gross violations of public trust?
Yes. I know a couple people who've come forth. I've met them, and I can tell you from talking with them, I know of the impact that this had on their lives. I grew up Catholic. I went to Our Lady of Victory Church. I didn't see anything like that myself. But then you read about these stories about how these individuals, these priests, preyed on young men, took advantage of them, sexually abused them. And what disgusts me as a Catholic is the church protected them. The church should have done is taken those individuals, those priests, and turned them over to law enforcement and said, this individual we believe is sexually molesting a child. Instead, the church protected them. When this first came out, I was not surprised because if you paid attention to other dioceses across the country, there were issues like this, Boston, Milwaukee. We're not the only ones in this region who are dealing with. Unfortunately, it seems like the entire Catholic Church during the 60s and 70s and 80s across our country knew about this and protected bad priests. Those priests should be locked up for the acts that they committed, the rapes that they committed against any individual, regardless of who they are. And I think we as a community must stand up, including those in the Catholic community, and say, this is unacceptable that it happened in the first place and that our church protected those individuals.
Your response, Ms. Dixon?
Thank you. Well, I am a practicing Catholic, and I found what has happened reprehensible, and I support whatever it takes, you know, to address this issue. You know, I have four kids. If something like this ever happened to one of my kids, I would be devastated. And I also know some people that were impacted this. And I'll tell you, even though it happened decades ago, their lives are forever scarred and changed as a result. Mm-hmm. They struggle to this day with depression and with addiction and with all kinds of things as a result of this. So it's a terrible stain on the Catholic Church, and I certainly hope that we can heal from it.
Thank you. I'd like to ask a follow-up question. If each candidate could be given 1 minute, we'll begin with Mr. Poloncar. What we really wanted to get at, and we're all outraged, obviously, here at St. Joe's and in the Catholic Church as a whole. But what we would like to know is, you know, the church policing itself has not worked out. So what role specifically, if any, could or should the government do, and at what level, to exercise oversight, if you will, Mr. Poloncarz?
Well, when we're talking about a criminal offense, of course, we have the law enforcement capability of our community to arrest individuals, give them a fair trial, and if they're found guilty, to put them behind bars. That's what should have happened. Unfortunately, the information, to my knowledge, was not shared with law enforcement. There was a story in the Buffalo News about how there was another priest who used to administer the boxing priest back in the 60s and 70s, who instead of the diocese turning the priest over to law enforcement, they sent the boxing priest over there to punch the priest in the head and say, don't do this again. These were child molesters. They should have immediately been turned over to law enforcement and then tried for the crimes that they convicted or that they committed. That's what should have happened, and if it happens today, that's what still should happen.
Ms. Dixon?
Well, and I think we are seeing the changes. That obviously should have happened decades ago, but there was nobody watching the store years ago and decades ago. Fortunately, this has all been brought to light now, and going forward, I do think that the church, anyone will have to answer to law enforcement that would do something like this. And I think going forward, there's going to be a lot more transparency with respect to this, not only this diocese, but the Catholic Church in general, and really of all faiths, that anybody doing something like this will be subject to the law.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Ms. Dixon.
Ms. Dixon, a central claim of your campaign is that you are not a Democrat and not a Republican, instead calling yourself an independent while actually being registered with the Independence Party. In the legislature, you caucus with Republicans and vote with them well over 90% of the time. You are cross-endorsed by the County Republican Party. Longtime Chris Collins associate Chris Grant works for your campaign. Ms. Dixon, exactly what makes you an independent?
You know, Mark Poloncarz will spend a majority of his day tweeting about issues and calling out people that don't align with him politically. I don't do that. I mean, I'm running a campaign right now, but if you look at the history of my social media, I don't call out people that are of a different political persuasion. My focus is on getting results and getting things done. As the ad even pointed out, most of our votes are unanimous. Most of our votes are road funding or accepting grant dollars or celebrating an Eagle Scout. Most of the votes are unanimous. So I have sided with the Democrats on a few issues that include fair housing, that includes a ban on fracking on county-owned land or in county parks. So I have gone against the Republican caucus when appropriate. When the district that I represent expected me to vote otherwise. But I am not a registered Republican, and I am not a registered Democrat. I am registered as an I, and I am that way because I believe that good ideas can come from either party.
Thank you, rebuttal. Mr. Poloncarz.
Many of you are going to be enrolling to vote in the near future, maybe a couple of years from now, 3 years from now. And when you get that form, you're going to see the political parties in the state of New York, and you're going to see an area that's blank. Democratic, Republican, Conservative, Working Families Party, Independence. Now it sounds like, ooh, I'm registering as an independent. No, you're registering for the Independence Party of the state of New York. The vice chair of the State of Independence Party Committee actually works for the Republican State Senate. It is a political party that is definitely aligned with the Republicans. If you want to be an independent, you don't want to be associated with anyone, then you should register as what they call a blank. You are truly independent at that point. What I've talked about during this race is that my opponent has just registered as an independent, but caucuses with the Republicans and votes with them. I think the public deserves to know that.
Ms. Well, Dixon, you want to respond
briefly? Yeah, I just find it interesting that In my years running for public office, I'm always primaried on the independence line, and I'm primaried on the independence line by Democrats who put somebody up on the independence line. And Mark Poloncarz's own brother carried Independence Party petitions. So if it's such a horrible party, they are very much a part of it as well.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, you have previously stated that you believe assault weapons, such as AR-15s, should be made illegal, specifically citing the national ban that was in place from 1994 to 2004. A federally funded study at the University of Pennsylvania concluded that the ban was largely ineffective at reducing gun violence and unlikely to be successful if renewed. In addition, California schools lead all states with 17 active shooter incidents and 158 total incidents of gun violence since 1970, despite laws that prohibit the possession of assault weapons. With that in mind, would you continue to support a ban on assault weapons?
Yes, but I think you make a good point. Since the expiration of the assault weapon bans, millions and millions of AR-15s, AK-47s, and the like have flooded the United States. And what we need to remember is that there was a time, pretty much before most of you were born or while you were in your formative years, when there was a ban in place. And you did not see, of course, the issues that you see today with the school shootings, the cinema shootings, the shootings pretty much everywhere you can think of. It was a time when I grew up and it was almost unheard of to hear of a mass shooting like that. And each of these incidences, it's an individual generally using an assault weapon. I come from a family of hunters. I don't have a problem with someone owning a normal rifle, a normal shotgun, a handgun. But these assault weapons were created for one purpose and one purpose only: to kill as many human beings in as short a period of time as possible. And that's what they do well. And when you put it in the hands of an individual who's unstable, you know what happens. We've seen it. I certainly support a continuation or the reinstitution of an assault weapons ban. I do support that the changes in the law to ensure that there are adequate background checks all over the place. Unfortunately, a lot of the crimes that are committed in our region, the handgun crimes that are committed in our region, are for guns that are easily available in Ohio and Pennsylvania and are brought across the line. Why? Because they don't have the background checks. They don't have the other types of loopholes in the gun shows laws that you often see and protected here. So I think it's important that we do institute it.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Ms. Dixon?
Well, the data that you have provided, I think, tells much of the story. We do have laws in place that are oftentimes not enforced. We have, laws that aren't followed. I'd like to think that all the shooters would turn in their weapons, but that's just not going to happen. I am pro-Second Amendment, but, we have a big issue in this country with mental health as well. And we don't see enough funding for mental health at the state level. We have mental health office in Erie County, which we could do a greater focus on. And to be frank, social media, I think we fan the flames more than ever before with social media.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our next direct question to Ms. Dixon.
Since the beginning of 2018, five school shootings have claimed 10 or more victims, and 160 separate incidents of gun violence have been recorded in our schools. According to recent FBI statistics, 2018 saw 27 active shooter incidents, the most of any year since it began recording such data in 1970. Those incidents took the lives of 85 people and wounded another 128. Here at St. Joe's, we undergo lockdown and accountability drills to prepare for a potential threat to our safety. School shootings have been on the rise for years, and students here overwhelmingly believe that casualties will continue to rise as well. What specific measures would you propose to reduce, or better still, eliminate gun violence in our schools?
Well, look, I send my kids to school, and I worry about it just like every other parent does. I have friends that are teachers that tell me about the lockdown and drills and things that they have to endure. It's not fair and it's not right that we have to live in a society that's like that. But again, I go back to the issues of mental health, I think, are a big part of it. I mean, when you think about when guns have been legal in this country for a very long time, what has changed? And there's so much more pressure on our young people. There's so much more out there, information for them to obtain. And I just think that those are some of the biggest things driving what we're seeing right now. It is troubling, but I don't know that more laws will stop those bent on causing harm to people. They will find another way. We see it all the time. And if I believed for one second that those bent on harming people would abide by the new laws, then that would be one thing. But it's not going to change those who are already struggling with a lot. And so I do think we need to do more to address mental health issues. I think that would be a great start, because that is the one thing that has changed. I think society has changed because there is so much more out there and so much more pressure on our young people.
Thank you. Mr. Polenkars.
I would agree we need to invest more in mental health. That's what actually the Erie County Department of Mental Health does, is it focuses on these issues working with service providers. But there were mentally ill individuals back in the 1950s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. You weren't seeing these issues with school shootings. When I was growing up, we didn't have to worry about doing special things and going on lockdown associated with the school shooting. When I was a kid, they used to teach us about how to duck and cover with regards to a potential nuclear bomb, but I never thought there was going to be a nuclear bomb dropped on me by the Soviet Union. But then you watch what's going on in our country and you see these continual shootings, and I have to think that each of you wonder, what's going to happen? When they do a practice, is it real? Is it a practice? And that's not something that any of you should deal with. We have an opportunity to end assault weapons. We should do it.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Polenkars.
As high school students, we are not oblivious to the teen vaping epidemic in America. Over 3.6 million teens use electronic cigarettes in America. Now as many as 33 people have died and more than 1,000 have been hospitalized as a result of vaping-related illnesses. New York has taken the lead in trying to stem this tide by becoming the first state to ban the sale of flavored vape additives. What else do you think should be done to reduce the use of electronic cigarettes among teens in general and in our schools specifically?
Well, once again, the cigarette companies just went from cigarettes to vaping products, and they started targeting you guys. It's as simple as that. And it's terrible, because I think you know what can happen. You can easily become addicted to nicotine, and what's happened to the individuals who've died as a result of this are those that are exceptionally addicted to nicotine. Legislator Dixon and I were asked a similar question before, and I think we agree on this, that we want to ensure that no child has access to vaping products. They are bad for you. The Erie County Department of Health is working right now with the New York State Police and doing unannounced visits of minors to see if they can buy vaping products. And we have caught vaping stores in our region selling products to minors, and they are going to be held accountable on the law for it. Nicotine addiction is a bad addiction, and as you've seen recently with what's happened with the altered vaping devices, people are actually dying from it. There are people in Western New York who are suffering from the illnesses associated with that. I get the reports from our Department of Health. We need to do everything we can to ensure children under the age of 18 are denied the opportunity to vaping. You may think it looks cool, but it's not. And as you've seen recently, it could kill you. Vaping isn't cool. We actually have a public law in New York and in Erie County that prevents you from vaping in a building. And I think it's important because it's not good for your health. And that's why we've worked to try to prevent it from expanding.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Ms. Dixon.
So the law that Mr. Polenkars references is a law that was passed in the legislature with my support. Look, as I've stated before, I see a lot of these issues with my own kids, and I see it in the schools. What happened with vaping was it was like the wild, wild west. You know, it came on all of a sudden, seemingly out of nowhere, and there were no regulations in place. And so it was very easy to access it. Kids became addicted early on or started vaping early on, not knowing what the repercussions were, because we didn't know. So in time, and as time has gone on, we've learned more about the risks of vaping. And so, again, I was part of legislation that did prevent vaping in public places.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Ms. Dixon.
In recent years, unemployment rates have steadily dropped in Erie County to around 4%. However, people of color are twice as likely to be unemployed than white people in Erie County. And a study in 2017 showed that despite representing only 12% of the population, African Americans represent nearly a third of Erie County's residents living below the poverty line. The only way out of the cycle of poverty is to provide jobs or skills for those who are in need. How would you work to lower the minority unemployment rates in Erie County and combat the disproportionate poverty rate between white people and people of color?
Well, we have to invest in these communities, and I don't see the investment in these communities to date. That's first and foremost. But, secondly, We talk a lot about the unemployment rate, but what we don't talk as much about is the employment rate. And what I'm hearing, for example, from manufacturers is that they have business that they want to do. They have things that they want to make, but we have a retiring workforce, and we don't have a trained workforce to step in and take their place. And these are good-paying jobs. I think when we use ECC and, you know, BOCES and the Northland Training Center, and all, we train folks on the jobs that are available here in Western New York, and there are jobs that are available with the retiring workforce. We train them with the manufacturing skills and with the trade skills, and we create those opportunities because they are there for them. We just have to provide them the proper training and give them that opportunity.
Thank you. Your response, Mr. Poloncarz, excuse me.
It is a valid point, and it's something my administration has been working on. The issues associated with increased unemployment levels of people of color is a serious concern, and there's a lot of different reasons for it. Some of it is training. Some of it is transportation. Some of it is childcare, where an individual does not have the ability to have their child taken care of, so they don't work, even though they want to work, so that they can take care of their child. My administration has worked on each and every one of these. We've worked with New York State on something called Strike Force. Sounds like some really goofy YouTube show. But what it is, it's individuals from the county and the State Department of Labor that are going into neighborhoods on the east side of Buffalo, the west side of Buffalo and Niagara Falls to help individuals find the jobs and get the resources they need so they can stay employed.
Thank you. Rebuttal? Oh, excuse me.
Mr. Poloncarz. 11 U.S. states, plus the District of Columbia, have fully legalized recreational marijuana since 2014, according to the Marijuana Policy Project Lobbying Group. Another 14 states have decriminalized it. This summer, legislators in Albany added New York to that list and immediately expunged the records of low-level marijuana convictions across the state. The State Department of Health conducted a study last year that concluded it should be entirely legalized for adults, a position shared by Governor Cuomo. Mr. Poloncarz, where do you stand on the legalization of marijuana in New York State?
Well, I fully supported the decriminalization of it. An individual should not have their life ruined, their record ruined, because of possession of minor marijuana. If you are a large drug dealer, that's a whole other story, because it is a criminal act right now, was in New York State, and it certainly is to sell it. My health commissioner and almost every single health commissioner of counties across New York State are vehemently opposed to the legalization of the sale of marijuana. My colleagues across the United States, including those in Colorado, where it's been in a place for a number of years, are saying, you don't want it. You're going to have so many other problems that you haven't realized yet. I have to admit, sometimes people say, where do you stand on an issue? And I can see both sides of the issue, where there makes sense to legalize it and it doesn't make sense. The problem what I'm seeing in New York State is they're focused on one reason why they want to legalize marijuana, the money, and the money that would be generated from it. They're not thinking about the other issues. Police officers, if they pull somebody over, they think is under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you can't test on the road for marijuana. So there's no way to prove that that individual has actually marijuana in their system. So there's a lot of good about it, and there's a lot of bad. And truthfully, I see both each day. And as a result, I have not formulated a final decision as to what I would do. But my health commissioner is vehemently opposed to it, to the point that every time I see her, she pretty much reminds me of it.
Thank you. Ms. Dixon?
Well, I am in favor of decriminalizing it, and I am in favor of medical marijuana. At this point, I am not in favor of legalizing marijuana. I do like my city smelling like Cheerios. I don't know if I like it smelling like skunk. But, you know, here's some of the other offshoot, right, of legalizing marijuana. And I will use this as an example. The sheriff's office came over and they trained drug dogs. So the dogs can sniff. They can sniff out drugs. They can sniff out marijuana. So you've invested thousands of dollars in these dogs. Well, now you legalize marijuana. These dogs are of no use to law enforcement now. So now you have to get new dogs and train them, because even if somebody had cocaine and marijuana on them and they smell and the dog smelled something, you can't say in a court of law, they're not going to say, well, the dog really sniffed the cocaine and really didn't smell the marijuana.
Thank you.
Creates other problems.
Our next direct question to Ms. Dixon.
Ms. Dixon, To date, 12 schools have enacted, 12 states have enacted school voucher programs in one form or another, delivering tax breaks to those with children attending private schools, and therefore not directly benefiting from their public school system. Many Americans support the implementation of school vouchers as a way for less well-off families to secure a better education for their children than their local school system might offer them. However, many argue that such programs increase inequality of opportunity for children who remain in public schools that lose these tax dollars siphoned off by the vouchers. Do you support the implementation of a school voucher program? And if so, how would you determine the value of the vouchers issued?
I support school choice. I have kids that have attended public school and private school. But it's, you know, I do believe it's really up to the families to make their decision on what school, whether it's a charter school, private school, public school. With respect to the school vouchers, that's not, you know, something that the county executive office deals with, but I will say that I think everybody is entitled to a good education. And if a school or a school district is failing that person, that family, that neighborhood, that community, then they should have the right to go find a good education elsewhere. And we have seen school districts struggle, and we have seen private schools and charter schools struggle as well. But every child is entitled to a good and equal education.
Thank you. Your rebuttal?
Well, I certainly join with Legislator Dixon in saying I support school choice. As someone who went to public schools his entire life, including through college and law school, I do not support school vouchers. I've watched and seen inner city schools get decimated because of the lack of revenue that's there. My home city of Lackawanna does not receive anywhere near as much in assistance as it used to with tax revenue just because of loss of businesses. And now if the people of Lackawanna were forced to take away even more money so that it could be used for an individual to go to private school, I just don't agree with. People should have choice, and they have choices. There were multiple private schools in lower grades. Our Lady of Victory was a big one in Lackawanna. Of course, many people from Lackawanna went to Tymon and St. Francis, and I know that's not liked here, but I do believe they should have the option, but we, the rest of the people, should not necessarily be paying for it.
Thank you very much. Rebuttal? Oh, we've did that, done that.
Yes, we've done the rebuttal.
We're going to ask two more questions, and then we'll have the closing remarks, please. Okay. Our next direct question to Mr. Poloncarz.
Recently, the congressman representing the 27th district resigned, and not long ago, a Cheektowaga assemblyman and a New York State senator also did not seek re-election due to ethical problems. This is by no means a local, but a national problem. Multiple polling organizations indicate that voters generally hold politicians in low regard. Congress regularly receives approval ratings of under 20%, regardless of what party controls this body. In your opinion, why are so many politicians poorly regarded and have ethical problems? What can be done to remedy this threat to our government?
Well, it pains me when I see that happen, regardless of the political party associated with the individual, because then immediately everyone thinks, hey, the elected officials, they're all crooks. And we're not. And there's some good people sitting there, right there, that are former St. Joe's grads that are Democrats and Republicans who are here trying to do the right thing for the community. That's why I ran for this office. If I wanted to make more money, I'd go back to practicing law, because I could tell you I'd make a lot more money than I'm making right now. It's not about making money, it's trying to do the right thing for the community. And when you see individuals abuse public trust, it's sad because it hurts all of us, not just elected officials, but each and every one of these people in our community. I practiced law, I worked in the business sector, I saw some unethical things there with business leaders and others, but you don't see it publicized because it's in the private sector. It's not an individual who's out in the public representing the general public. So what I have told each and every one of my commissioners, department heads, if you act inappropriately, you're going to be terminated because you represent the public. Each and every one of you is my boss if you live in Erie County. You may not think it, but I represent the 925,000 people or so of Erie County. So each and every one of you is my boss. And it should be that thought from every elected official that the people that they represent is their boss. And if they take advantage of the system, if they try to enrich themselves, they should be held responsible, removed from office, and if they break the law, go to jail.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Ms. Dixon?
Well, you know, I agree that there are great people in public service, and then there are also those that are corrupt. What I find really unfair is when ads are run suggesting that because I spoke with somebody once upon a time or worked with somebody once upon a time that I must also be guilty of the crimes that this person was convicted of, which is what the ad that Mark Poloncarz keeps running against me would suggest. It's ridiculous. I mean, as a reporter, I did hold politicians accountable because I don't think it's right to abuse your office. And I believe that you are here to serve the public, and that's what you should be doing. And to suggest otherwise, you know, there are a long list of elected politicians in New York State have been found guilty of some pretty serious crimes that I don't suggest he's also guilty of.
Thank you.
Just brief rebuttal, I've never suggested that Ms. Dixon is doing the same thing or associated with the crimes of Mr. Collins. I did note that Mr. Collins' former chief of staff is her chief political advisor. This gentleman's house was raided in one investigation that led to the corruption conviction of a judge and another individual, and of course, his phone was confiscated in the Collins investigation. I just want to say, none of my political folks have ever had that happen to them.
You can respond, Ms. Dixon.
Sure. So, my political consultant has never been accused, tried, or convicted of anything, but I will say that he has supported or been supported by politicians that have been accused, charged, and or convicted of sexual harassment, federal corruption for covering up the sex harassment of a female employee, rape, hiring prostitutes, bid rigging, election fraud, and he even took campaign donations on 14 different occasions from a child predator after conviction.
Okay, quick response.
Just quickly, I can't be a... With regards to the individual who was convicted for child pornography, she's correct. An individual gave donations to my campaign. We didn't know about it. We didn't know about the conviction. When we found out about it, we gave all the money, not back to the individual, but to the Child Advocacy Center that helps children who are abused.
Thank you. Our last direct question will go to Ms. Dixon.
Since the tenure of Tim Howard as sheriff beginning in 2005, there have been 28 inmate deaths in the jails of Erie County, one of which occurred just this week. Four of these have occurred in the past 3 months. Conditions at our jails are so bad that the federal government has been exercising oversight at the county's jails facilities since the lawsuit brought by the U.S. Department of Justice was settled in 2011. Ms. Dixon, why hasn't the county legislator done more to compel Sheriff Howard to fix the situation?
Well, thank you for the question. In the county legislature, we have done quite a bit, actually. We have added staff to the sheriff's office. There's a corrections advisory board that acts as an oversight board. And I will also note that since all the trouble started, the Department of Justice and the Commission on Corrections, they come in periodically and they do checks on the sheriff's office to see if they are meeting certain criteria. And I have toured the jail on a few occasions, and I can tell you from when I first toured to when I most recently toured a couple of months ago that the conditions there have vastly improved. The DOJ was here at the beginning of October. What it said then was that the aspects of the jail and of the care of the prisoners that that the sheriff is in charge of, which is correctional health and which is the safety and security, that they are in sustained full compliance. The one area where they are not in sustained full compliance yet is mental health, which they expect will take another 2 to 3 years. That is the one department in the jail that is not overseen by the sheriff's office, but by the county executive.
Your rebuttal, Mr. Poloncarz.
One of the things that I disagree with the sheriff, and he's an independently elected official, he controls the jails. I don't, the legislature doesn't. One of the things I have disagreed, and it pertains to mental health, is what's called medication-assisted treatment for those who are dealing with an opiate epidemic. It appears the most recent suicides were individuals who were going through detox. And what we do in with dealing with individuals who have an opiate addiction is we don't want them really going through detox. What we want them is to get assistance for their addiction, and the best way is through what's called medication-assisted treatment, MAT, and that allows an individual to be weaned off it by putting a certain amount of a drug in their system that does not give them the high, but is basically like, fakes the system to getting opiates. We've wanted, the Department of Health has wanted it, the sheriff has refused to put it in.
Thank you. I want to ask a quick question of each of you. 1 minute, then we'll have closing remarks. Last night, I watched the televised debate, and Ms. Dixon, as you know, something you said last night became a lead story on WBEN and the media in general. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to clarify that and give Mr. Poloncarz an opportunity to respond. I did feel a little uncomfortable because it came right at the end, and I thought we need to address this here at St. Joe's.
Sure.
So you had mentioned in your remarks that Mr. Poloncarz is arrogant, it's his way or the highway, and a bully. And I wanted to give you time to clarify that, and then Mr. Poloncarz an opportunity to respond. 1 minute, please.
Absolutely. Well, I've seen it. you know, the county legislature doesn't act without directive from him on what to do. I hear it from the county workforce. I hear it from the private sector and the business people that are trying to get work done in Erie County. I hear it across the board, and it's frustrating. And here's the thing, like when you have a county workforce of over 4,000 people, many of them have great ideas, many of them have great concerns. When they feel uncomfortable that they can't bring their concerns, or they feel like their voice isn't being heard, or they struggle with how they're being dictated to, really, it's a problem. And it's been a problem for years. It has one of the reasons that motivated me to run, because I was tired of seeing it. You know, we are a strong community. We are stronger together than divided. But you deserve a voice. The people in county government deserve a voice. The business community deserves a voice.
Mr. Poloncarz.
I was disappointed when the accusation was made yesterday. But I think if you look at my record as county executive, I'm not a bully. I've worked with Republicans to pass laws like the microbead ban. That was passed when the Republicans controlled the majority, and I'm proud that not only did the microbead ban for Erie County go into effect here, it was replicated and is now going to be the law of the United States because it was passed at the end of the Obama administration. That happened when the Republicans controlled the legislature. When you're in government, you're never going to agree on everything. That's why you have multiple political parties. But I think what you need to do is work with your partners to come to a conclusion that's best for the community. I'm proud to say that I was always able to negotiate a budget when the Republicans controlled the legislature, a budget that kept the county's tax rate below the tax cap, reduced taxes every time, and my opponent voted for them. It's simple as this. We are not always going to agree on everything in our society, but that's okay. We can talk it out. We have the First Amendment right of freedom of speech, and that's what I think is appropriate.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, I would ask each candidate to limit their closing remarks to 2 minutes, and we'll begin based on the coin toss with Mr. Poloncarz, and then Ms. Dixon will end our debate with her closing remarks. And I want to thank each of you for taking time out of your busy schedules. They have had other debates this week, and it's grueling running a political campaign. Mr. Poloncarz.
Thank you, Mr. Lina, and thank you all for being here today, though I know you pretty much didn't have a choice. And hopefully you're not tested on what was brought up here. But I do appreciate you all coming in, because this is an important process that we have in our government, which is talking through the issues. And as you saw, we do have a disagreement on a number of the issues. Many of them we feel the same. That's the beauty about our society, is that working together, we hash out things and we try to create a better community for all. It has been my pleasure to serve as county executive these last few years, and to those who in the past had the chance to vote, thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so. We've accomplished a lot in this new Buffalo, this new Erie County, but there's more work to be done. For many, many years, before most of you were born, we used to wait for the Savior to come in, the Lone Ranger on his white horse with a silver bullet in his holster. That would have saved our community. Because, folks, it was bad. It was really bad. And I give credit to those who stayed in this community to work out and try to create a better community for all, because most of the friends that I had in high school and college left. But there's a bunch of us that stayed and said, you know what, there is going to be no Lone Ranger that's going to save us. What's going to save this community is us working together to create a better Buffalo, a better Erie County. I'm proud of the work that we've done. We weathered a lot of snowstorms together. We didn't talk about that today, but county government has an important function in doing that, and I'm proud of the work that we've done. I'm proud of being able to work with our partners, regardless of their political affiliation, to create this new Buffalo, this new Erie County. But there's more work that needs to be done. I don't want to see us go backward to the bad old days. That's why I ask for everyone's vote. If you can vote, starting with early voting on October 26th and, of course, Election Day on November 5th, so that we can keep moving Erie County forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dixon, your closing remarks, please.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank all of you. First of all, great questions, and obviously well-researched, and you're obviously getting a great education here. And I want to wish all of you good luck for those of you that are starting to look at colleges. Been there. That is also a grueling process, so I wish all of you the best of luck. You know, I got into politics not because I love politics. I got into politics because I love government and I wanted a seat at the, I love the community, rather, and I wanted a seat at the table. I was a reporter for a long time. I'm a mom of four. And when my parents, you know, raised myself and my three siblings, we were fortunate enough that we were able to find work here. And as their bodies began to fail them, my siblings and I were there to be able to care for them. My mom has had Alzheimer's for 14 years. My dad passed away 4 years ago. But we've been there to take care of them. I want my four kids to have that same opportunity to be here. I want your parents to have that same opportunity for you guys to be able to find work here, stay here, live here, and raise your own families here. We can only do that if we stop some of the restrictions and regulations that are preventing us from moving forward. We can only do that if we stop the partisan politics and start putting people before political agendas and partisan agendas. Because we are a great community, but we're a great community because of all of you. And I want to thank you so much for having us here today. For those of you who are 18, I encourage you to vote. I would appreciate your vote on November 5th. But regardless, I hope that today's experience really is something that that you can remember for years to come and maybe encourage you to become involved somehow.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dixon.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.